Krista, are you there?
Radio.
Krista, are you there? Let's see. Krista, are you there?
Hello?
Krista, are you there, Krista?
Ah. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. I'm so sorry. I had such a challenge dialing in. I don't know what was happening, but
no problem.
But we're here now.
Awesome.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for agreeing to do this even without your partner. I'm
Absolutely.
So sorry.
Oh, no worries. I was sad to hear that, but I Cynthia's been going back and forth this summer with some health issues that her son has been dealing with, so it was
I'm so
sad,
sorry.
But hopefully they're getting to the bottom of it, so
okay.
So
good.
we didn't want to continue.
Yeah, that's such a
But they were able to go on their planned vacation last week because he was feeling better, but they have, I think, another camping thing coming up this weekend. So I think they're just trying to make sure he's well, because summer is like the time that you want to be taking advantage of all these fun things and enjoying yourself. So we didn't want to keep pushing it off. But I know Cynthia would add a lot to the conversation. But like you said, we'll be able to hopefully do that in the fall on that webinar.
Yeah,
so.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, well, we'll get another shot anyway.
Yeah.
This
and
could
we
be
met,
like a teaser.
Exactly. We met to brainstorm some questions, and so I feel like I have some of her thinking that will inform the conversation. So hopefully I can bring some of that to the table.
Okay, good. So we obviously we didn't start yet, and I want you to know, so we have like 30 minutes in this on this platform, and whatever we need to talk about before or after, and we're going to aim to get about 15 minutes of podcast time.
Yep.
So if it's less than that, that's fine. We'll try not to go over that. And the other thing I want you to know is that we have a brilliant, amazing editor on staff who, can manipulate the audio. So if we have any hiccups along the way, like, she can make it sound seamless for us.
That makes me feel much better.
Good. Yeah, so if there's anything you want to start over or, like, whatever, you feel free to do so.
Awesome. Thank you.
So anything else before we start? Anything you want to know? I mean, I was going to talk through kind of how I was going to do this with both of you, but since it's just you, it's pretty straightforward, just asking questions. Anything you want to touch base about? Okay.
No. I think it's my first time participating. Lucy's done a few, so she gave me a little bit of a heads up of what to expect. So I think I'm ready to start.
Cool. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll start by just welcoming you and introducing what we're talking about, and then I'll ask you to give some background about 10 Men, and then we'll just go from there. And just, it's a casual conversation, so just like you're talking just to me. I'm excited about what you're going to talk about. Okay,
you too.
Ready? I'm going to take a sip.
Yes.
Hello and welcome, Krista. Thank you so much for joining us today on NRCDV Radio's Delta Focus Story Series to talk about your work with 10 Men to mobilize male community leaders in Rhode Island to prevent intimate partner violence. So first, Krista, can you offer listeners some background about 10 Men and the history of the project?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and to talk about 10 Men. So 10 Men is a statewide initiative of the Rhode Island Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and it's funded through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's currently in its seventh year, and it consists of male community leaders who are striving to break the silence around men's violence against women and challenge harmful gender norms that contribute to the problem. 10 Men members raise awareness through public awareness campaigns and multimedia, work to educate the community through presentations and workshops, and really try to engage their spheres of influence and their networks to create community-based solutions for preventing violence.
Okay, so 7 years is a long time to sustain a program like this. And so I can only imagine kind of like the learning curve that, you know, and the learning that's happened over those 7 years. So can you talk a little bit about what you've learned along the way and how your approach might have changed since, you know, your original vision of the project?
Sure. So we really take a developmental data to action approach, an empowerment evaluation approach to the work. So all the learning that's happened has been really instrumental to the project and the program and how it's evolved and how we've moved forward. We really feel we had to go through what we've gone through to learn what we've learned and have been open to shifting and changing as we go so we can be responsive to the data, to the feedback, and to needs and opportunities as we learn what those are. So that approach has been really integral to the process. And we've definitely learned some things along the way that have shaped the program. For example, how to identify men that were a right fit for the project, and then how to authentically engage them in the efforts once they were at the table and formally involved, whether that's been through informal networking events or immersive retreat experiences. We've done a men's summit that is open to the community, to all men, including trans men, who can gather to have these conversations. And for example, through the summit, based on responses to the summit and interest in the summit from others in the community, we also recently held a community conversation back in April, which was our first one facilitated by 10 men that was open to people of all genders, where community members, including some advocates and survivors in our network, could come together to engage in a dialogue since the men's summit was closed to men. So we were able to open it up to people of all genders to have that conversation.
Okay, no, that's great. So, I mean, in terms of how to identify men, you know, to bring into the project, what did you learn there? Like, I think I remember reading in your story that you developed a tool, some kind of screening tool that helped you identify, you know, who might be a good fit.
We have, yes. We call it our member engagement description, where it really outlines the expectations, also the benefits of being part of the program, but the expectations and responsibilities of 10 members. And sort of what we're looking for in folks who want to engage in this work at this in this way, which is a demonstrated commitment to social justice, to who have demonstrated alignment with feminist and social justice values and principles. Since these are we're not really doing training with the men. We definitely build skills and understanding in the dynamics of domestic violence and in many different topics. But it's really a program that aims to mobilize folks in the community who are sort of already on board with this is a problem, we need to address it. And so we're giving them tools and experiences and a space where they can explore what steps they can take and get that peer support from one another. So to have that that tool that we can use during recruitment and screening so that our men's engagement coordinator, Lee, he'll sit with folks and we can have that on paper so they know what they're committing to. They know if they can also assess if they're a good fit so that they're sort of poised to, once they've, as they undergo this experience, to really be proactive bystanders and you know, culture changers and change agents. So they're sort of positioned already at the beginning to take those steps and to get more involved in their communities with the support from the program.
That makes so much sense. Yeah, and it really, I mean, it really emphasizes how important readiness is, you know, when it comes to our prevention initiatives and them being successful and them creating change. So I wonder if you can reflect on the impact that your project has had, either just on an individual level or on a community level. What kind of changes are you seeing?
Sure. Most recently, our cohort, 2018-2019 cohort ended, and we just are starting up our next group. And with that, with the previous group, we toward the end of the program end with a project focus group, and it's always amazing to sit in on that conversation and hear about the individual impacts, the relationship impacts among one another and their families and their friends, their workplaces, and to hear from them. This most recent group really in their own words, you know, some of the things we're hoping to hear and some of the things we're hoping we're accomplishing, to really hear them say in their own words that that's been their experience has been really rewarding. And that, you know, some of the things like once you turn on this light, once that light switch is flicked, you can't turn it off. And I look at everything differently now, from media, you know, media headlines around sports to what I'm saying to my son, you know, on the soccer field. And it's really cool to hear that. And then when we look at the data, we're still in the process of looking at this most recent group's data, but the cohort previously, to see that they're reporting changes in areas like understanding the dynamics of abuse, understanding barriers women face in leaving abusive relationships, understanding the root causes of violence, how gender norms negatively impact, you know, members of our community. To see that data I think 100% of our most recently evaluated cohort is showing, you know, shifts along those issues and positive changes in those areas, how gender socialization contributes to IPV, to intimate partner violence. So, and also their readiness to intervene when they witness a situation or suspect a situation, feeling positive about their own abilities to challenge others, you know, harmful attitudes toward women or toward violence. So to see that data and then to also hear it in their own words through the focus group and through other conversations, to have all of that, it's always so exciting to, you know, it's very inspiring to be able to feel what the impact has been. And we're also really excited because we're working with a doctoral student who is leading a social network analysis among the 10 men. So that is currently underway, and that is looking at the impact that the 10 men have had within their spheres of influence and among the men that they know. So how are the 10 men sort of being these hubs of action in the community, so we can hopefully get a better sense of not only the impact that the program is having on the 10 men themselves, but then how they're going into their communities and impacting others. So that's really exciting.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know that's always been the goal of the project. And so it'll be really amazing to see kind of what that change has been and how your efforts are making a difference within these spheres of influence. That's really cool.
Yeah, and I think our communications work too. The raising the visibility of men engaged in these efforts is an intentional part of the work, because it is countercultural to have men talking about this issue and wanting to be engaged in these efforts. So it sort of takes it from that individual relationship level to a state level, where we can have statewide public awareness campaigns and media opportunities that feature the 10 men, which is necessary for social norms change, obviously.
And so you can flip more switches, right?
Exactly.
I really love the way that you describe that. Like, it's really, and that I have seen that happen, where the switch is flipped and you can't unswitch it. And that's a really tangible pivot, you know, that people make. So
absolutely.
That's cool. That's really great. So for people who want to, who are interested in replicating or adapting this project in their own community, what advice would you give?
Yes, we're always really excited when folks reach out. We've had folks from different states and even within our state reach out to learn more about the program because they're interested in exploring what that work could look like in their community. So we've been having a lot of those conversations recently. And we always say, don't be afraid to start. Don't be afraid to start small. I think our first 10-men cohort was 4 to 6 men, and we've, you know, grown over time, and not only grown by cohort, but now cohort to cohort, we're building, you know, a critical mass of men in Rhode Island who are engaged and leaders on this issue. So, you know, definitely listen and have humility and a willingness to change directions or to change different elements of the program based on feedback and data. And be open to sort of co-creating the program and the experience with the participants. And I think, you know, it's culture change work, so there's no recipe book, and it's not going to happen overnight. So being patient and that meaning making, you know, allowing that to happen over time. We've definitely been fortunate to have continuity of staff and continuity of funding, so that's allowed us to explore and aspire toward, you know, really deeply understanding the work and where we want to go toward, you know, our goals of broader culture change. So that's, you know, that's sort of been, that's not always the case, but we've been fortunate to have that continuity of staff and funding. And I think to really utilize the resources that are available. So we've had opportunities through partners in this work, including NRCDV and the Prevent IPV project, Prevent Connect, of course, the CDC, other colleagues in the work through Delta, and also, you know, other states. So the support we've received and the resources we've been able to sort of lean on have really been invaluable as well, because we're certainly not doing this work in a vacuum, and we're not the only ones, you know, doing this work. Even though it is, you know, a more emerging aspect of the field, we've really relied on those thought partners and that information sharing and idea sharing among states, and that dialogue at the national level continues to inform our work. And I think, you know,
Go on if you like.
I didn't mean to cut you off. No, that's okay.
Okay. So, yeah, no, and I totally appreciate that. I think that especially the shout out to Prevent IPV and NRCDV, thank you for that. I think it is really important to know that we're all learning from each other and we're all doing this together. But the one, you know, point of learning that you share is really consistent among all the Delta Focus projects that we've been learning from, which is following the lead of the participants and following them in the direction they want to go in, and being willing to be flexible when it comes to doing that. And I'm hearing you say that, and it's just, I want you to know that advice is echoed, you know, all across the board.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's just really interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's a balance of meeting the men and the participants where they are, moving with their willingness, being responsive to the culture of masculinities and creating that space, and bringing in our expertise of our field and sort of pushing the participants along and having advocates' voices at the table and having women's voices at the table, and really, you know, living into what we want to see, where we're creating the space for these men to have these conversations. And it's an allyship with the women and advocates who have been at the forefront of the movement, you know, for many decades. So it's definitely striking that balance and making sure we're listening and we're being responsive to what that, you know, how that experience is unfolding.
Great. No, thank you for that. So then when it comes to kind of your future work and where you see it going, like, what do you think are the growth edges for your project?
We've been talking a lot about modeling the values we're trying to change and shape in the larger culture through our work, through our organizing committee that, you know, coordinates the project, through the program itself, including modeling gender equity in all spaces. Again, we're creating the space for the men, and it's not in isolation, and it's in partnership with our, for example, the folks on our staff who identify as women who are on the organizing committee, being at the meetings and finding space for those voices. We're exploring, you know, how do we do this men's engagement work without reinforcing the harm that can be caused by the gender binary, and making sure that we're addressing and acknowledging the spectrum of gender-based violence and addressing homophobia in the conversations, for example. So we're really sort of, now that we feel like we're in a place where we can push, where we can look at, okay, these have been the gaps, and this is where we can push a little bit more. This is, you know, what the space can look like going forward, and let's figure that out. And so we're also exploring how and where we can build in tools to hold ourselves accountable to that and to our larger vision and values of, you know, anti-racism, anti-oppression across issues. So we're considering, you know, after every meeting, our men's engagement coordinator works outside of the office, so let's make sure, you know, we always have sort of an informal debrief after the meeting, but it might only be a select number of staff. So let's make sure we're scheduling a call so we can talk immediately after about anything that might have happened that we think we can learn from after the meeting, or identifying more concretely what the learning objectives for each meeting are, just sort of really starting to nail down some of those pieces. And our empowerment evaluator, Cynthia, has raised the importance of principles-focused evaluation as being an area, sort of a growth edge that we might want to lean into, where we're identifying what those overarching principles of our work, not only with the 10 men, but amongst the staff who are coordinating 10 men, making sure we're always going back to those principles and those values that we're wanting to align with, like accountability, like gender equity and gender inclusivity. So those are some of the things that we feel ready to, now that we have a really strong infrastructure and framework and a lot of, you know, great data, that we're hearing that, you know, this is being impactful. Where are we going next? You know, what can we push towards? So those are some of those areas.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. I applaud you. I think it's amazing that you are exploring ways, you know, to be inclusive, to be responsive to the complexities of people's, you know, gender identities and experiences. And I'm really excited to see what comes out of that. I think that the field has a lot to learn in that area. So that's wonderful.
Really,
so if people want to, good. If people want
to
connect with you or learn more about 10 Men, what should they do?
We have a page dedicated to 10 Men on our website. So it's ricadv.org/10men. And you can see the different members of the cohorts and their different backgrounds, some of the communications materials and videos that we put together and public awareness campaign materials with the 10 Men. So that's a great resource. And also just reaching out to the coalition. If you want to have a conversation, we're always willing to jump on a call and talk through, you know, what the programs look like and what this work is looking like in Rhode Island and how it might, you know, how there might be some lessons learned for other states and other communities. So we're always open to those conversations.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much, Krista. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk with you about 10 Men and the exciting work that you're doing in Rhode Island. So thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's been our pleasure.
Okay, so that's it. We're done. We did it. It was great.
Goes
I know
really
a couple
fast.
Places where I interrupted and there were a couple little blurps, so we'll edit those out. No,
okay, cool.
I did it. It's all me. But, like, yeah, so I think those will be easy to take out. And
okay, cool.
Yeah, are you feeling good? Are you feeling happy?
I'm feeling good. There were a few little things that I'm like, I don't know if I should have said something that way, but I think that's the nature of something like this where it's an informal conversation. So I don't think there was anything super problematic that I was like, ooh, that shouldn't be in there. So.
No, I think it's good. And so what we'll do is when we are ready with the recording, we'll send it your way so you can have a listen before it's released so that if anything does jump out at you, you know, you'll have an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, it's hard to know in the moment where how exactly it came across.
It is. And you know what? I think you might be surprised when you listen just how, it turned out better than I thought it did. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's usually my experience where it's like, I think I'm all flustered, but then I find out it was all right.
Yeah, and it's hard because language around, you know, gender identity and some of these things, like, it moves so quickly that we've been talking about, like, we've been using men and folks who identify as men, and then now we're shifting to all men, including trans men, like really naming what we mean by that. And so when I'm talking about it in this way, and I want to make sure we're being sensitive to that, you know, I'm like second guessing myself in the moment, like, wait, am I
saying it in the way I would want to say it? Yeah,
exactly.
No, I think you did, and I'm so appreciative because you know, you're the first one to really raise this. When it comes to the men's engagement story, you know, mm-hmm. when it comes to this Delta Focus project specifically. So
right.
I'm really glad that you did, and I think that it'll give people some things to think about.
Cool. I hope so.
So,
too.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. So
Yay.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Cool. That was fun.
And thanks, too, for – good. I'm glad. I'm glad you thought it was fun. And thanks, too, for also being willing to, you know, join our webinar in September. We're going to – be sending some follow-up information about that soon. I'm pretty sure we're going to settle on the 12th. So
So, okay, cool. And will that be with the other story, like folks from the other stories as well? Will it be sort of a collective conversation?
It will be, yeah, because the CDC is asking us to kind of bundle together the first set of release stories. So that's what we'd like to do, is kind of point to, you know, just the community-based projects themselves, and less about, you know, here's what our website is, and more about here's what the projects did and here's what they learned. And you definitely have some really great points of learning to bring into that conversation. So
awesome. We're excited about it. We're looking forward to it.
Yay. Okay. Well, thanks, Krista. Give Cynthia my best. I hope everything works out
Thank
with
you.
Her son, and that she gets to go
I'll
on a great camping weekend. Okay.
Too.
Okay. All right. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Sounds good.
All
talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.